Yeah, David, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your time. And sorry about the circumstances for our meeting.
Yes, so am I. So are we at the Asheville Blade Co-op.
Yeah, why don't you just give us a rundown of exactly what happened and from your perspective, why?
So as readers of our paper, Ashevillians know in general, the city of Asheville has taken a increasingly draconian and hostile policy towards houseless people, especially camps. And this started like all the way back last February. They evicted a camp like right for the coldest night of the year so quickly, even nonprofits didn't know what was happening. But it's really continued ever since, and it's really escalated this winter. So right before Christmas, you saw some locals, and notably you've seen more mobilization around housed and unhoused locals, like helping each other out on this and kind of pushing back on the which is something that the city's really worried about because it doesn't like when different populations like team up to push back on gentrification. So at the Aston Park, which had been the site of an eviction back, a really brutal one back in April, some locals started to set up like a camping space. It was like food supplies and entertainment stuff. And also like people would just come out and make community art. So we heard about this, of course, and, you know, being this is an issue of public interest, the Blade, you know, staff started going out there occasionally and just taking a look at things, seeing if there was any, like, police response. And there actually started to be some increasing, you know, early on, the first day it happened, like, the police came out with, like, several cars and the paddy wagon was pretty clearly a threat, but that day they didn't come and arrest anybody. A few days later, on December 22nd, Asheville Police Captain Mike Lamb, who's kind of their point person in a lot of these evictions, showed up at the camp and told people, and this was just well before closing hours, it was like early evening, that they could be charged with felony littering, grabbing art supplies in the camp. And to use professional reporter jargon, he was lying. A felony littering charge requires dumping over 500 pounds of trash somewhere. Clearly, a few art supplies in the park are not doing that. He was literally just making something up to threaten people. Matilda Bliss, one of our journalists, reported on this and publicly, you know, said that this captain was lying. On the Christmas night rolls around and people are camping out. And so our reporters are out there, and Matilda had gone out there and observed police showing up, and Veronica Coit, another one of our journalists, soon joined her, and they were monitoring the police presence, which was considerable. It was probably close to or the entire on-duty police force on Christmas night. A lot of vehicles, a lot of cops. Now, you know, this is like a few tents in a park and some like food, you know, food supplies and space that have been set up. And they come out and they start threatening arrest. And the first thing they do, interestingly, is point towards Veronica and say, you know, that point them out for taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And then swoop in and arrest them and handcuff them. And then they go seek out Matilda, who was, you know, Veronica was clearly identifying themselves as press repeatedly. We have a video we've put up on our Facebook and Instagram where Veronica does this. If people want to look, like, you can see them doing it. The cops go over then to Matilda. And we have a recording of this on audio that Matilda's repeatedly saying, "Hey, I'm the press, the first and right to be here." Her press pass is literally like right out, you know, mm-hmm. openly displayed, her press ID. And she's told she has to leave the park entirely. And Veronica was told that before, which obviously would stop them from being able to cover this massive police deployment.
Mm-hmm.
And when Matilda refused, she was arrested. Her phone and belongings were confiscated, which they have still not been returned. Which is notable. They were both, as the editor of the Blade, as an editor of the Blade and someone who's monitoring the situation, and helping with coverage that night, I immediately go down to the jail. Matilda, despite one of the first people arrested, was released last. She was left in the paddy wagon, like handcuffed, for hours, which is pretty clearly like, you know, retaliation for like her recent reporting, which had not been very critical of the APD. This is the second time Veronica has been arrested by the Asheville police. Veronica was also arrested in August 2020. They were pulled out of their vehicle. Their press pass is right there. And keep in mind, journalists have rights if they're not displaying their press pass, but it makes it very clear that like this particularly egregious that it was like right there and saying this person's press and they're still arresting them. Notably, neither was, after they were arrested, the APD, by all accounts, escalated its attack considerably, like started dragging people out of tents. So it's not coincidence they like targeted the press first. Because that's the point of the press, is to monitor things like that, especially press like the Blade that is more critical of the Asheville police and don't really like echo whatever their PR talking points are.
Right.
So, on top of that, like, they were both standing back and observing. And actually other people were standing back observing, and I just like members of the public who'd shown up to see what was going on. And of the people standing back and observing, only Matilda and Veronica were arrested. This was very clear, retaliation. It was very clear attempt to just silence the press and try to intimidate us. It's failed on that front, but they dang well tried. This was so egregious, it was quickly condemned by the Committee to Protect Journalists, which, if you know, listeners don't know, is the international organization that works around the world to protect freedom of the press. They quickly condemned this for what it was, which and called for the charge to be dropped and Matilda's belongings to be returned. We've since published some of the photos that Veronica was trying to get out and that was, you know, stopped from taking more. They do show police just like showing up and intimidating people and a large presence for, you know, people that just have tents on grass, basically. People shouted things like, where are we supposed to go? Which is a good question because there's an insufficient shelter. The city has not spent on, you know, creating more shelters. As a matter of fact, at the end of March, they're shutting down an emergency shelter they'd finally started under a lot of public pressure. So 75 families will, you know, almost certainly have nowhere to go. And so that takes us into the council meeting because, and people can read a detailed account of this, in one of our latest pieces up at the Asheville Blade, which is, titled Christmas Night Crackdown. I think it appalled a lot of people that this happened on Christmas, you know, like,
yeah.
that they decide to spend that day literally kicking people out of shelter who were already in poverty.
Well,
and people who showed to support them.
Right. There's a lot of interesting, points to this, account and also your reporting. And that is, you know, typically, Asheville Police Department has not done evening crackdowns. So, it's very interesting that they would come on a Christmas night.
Exactly. Well, yeah, it is. And honestly, go on. Sorry.
No, and then the other thing that stands out to me is that, you know, you mentioned that you've had some international condemnation from the Committee to Protect Journalists, and you've also received some coverage and support from local media, Asheville Free Press, Ash Vegas,
absolutely.
And yet our mainstream sort of media, Asheville Citizen Times, Mountain Express, haven't done anything.
Yes, that silence is really notable on this, as a matter of fact. It's because generally, you know, and I'll give an example, like, as people may know, like, you know, I used to work for the Mountain Express, was fired as part of a union drive, trying to reveal some coverage they were covering up. But when a Mountain Express reporter was arrested in 2016 while covering the occupation of the police lobby, the Blade had no hesitation condemning that arrest and calling for the charge to be dropped, just like immediately, because that's what you do. Despite whatever issues they have with Mountain Express's management, like arresting the press, I mean, police arrests generally are a really violent, harmful tactic, but there is a specific, like, when they're arresting the press, it's a clear sign that they're just, like, trying to prevent their actions from being honestly recorded. But the Citizen Times, a lot of some of those publications have not. You mentioned the Asheville Free Press. They have been excellent on this, and it's honestly why I'm glad there are multiple news organizations in town now that are taking this much more, like, harshly critical and skeptical eye towards, like, the status quo, towards, you know, the police department and City Hall, say. Asheville Free Press has had some very good coverage of this, also looking into the lack of transparency around the stuff. We really appreciate their support.
Yeah, agreed.
And so that's been, yeah, Ash Vegas, you know, is featured like our immediate social media coverage about our reporters being arrested. You know, we were covering this live on social media as it was happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then our journalists were arrested. And, you know, there have been three arrests of Asheville journalists in the past 20 years. Two of them were our journalists, the Asheville Blade. Mm-hmm. And they've happened within, you know, a little over a year of each other at this point. So I think that's, yeah, I think that's all definitely notable. And it is interesting, though. Yeah, it's like there's this blind spot in kind of the establishment press here. They did finally do an article, but it was like buried in a thing about houseless policy was that, hey, two journalists got arrested.
right.
You know, so I think that's telling. You know, so it is very clear that, like, I think if this were Citizen Times reporters that were out there, they would not have been arrested. They mm-hmm. also probably wouldn't have been out there in the first place, though, which I think is notable. You know, this is something that larger than non-establishment press in Asheville is, like, really dedicated to covering this issue.
Right.
And so, yeah, I guess that all kind of brings us into
last night's city council meeting.
Yeah,
and we should, you know, preface it by saying that, you know, for months now we've been talking about houseless camps and code purples and
yes.
how the CDC is, like, you know, saying that we should not be, you know, breaking up these camps during the pandemic.
Yes, the CDC has been very clear on that for obvious public health reasons.
Right.
You know, nothing in a houseless person's already very difficult and desperate life is improved by suddenly kicking them out in the cold, making it where service providers can't find them, like basically putting them in a lot more danger, removing what shelter they do have. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, yes, camping out in winter is incredibly dangerous. Having people isolated during winter is far more dangerous.
Right.
And
we should also
we
should also mention that, you know, in our last discussion from council meeting last month, you know, prior to that, there was a lot of slapping each other on the back for providing housing to homeless folks
yes.
through an agreement with a local hotel that had abruptly stopped and was told that they were not, is not moving forward after all.
No, so, it's not moving forward. As a matter of fact, they're scrapping it. So in March, a lot of people will be out in the street.
Right. So I want to preface all of that into last night's meeting. So go ahead and take it from there.
Certainly. And I should also note, if I'd mentioned before, like six people total were arrested that night. Two of them were our reporters. So, you know, certainly this was intended to send a message to multiple parts of the community, and a really ugly one. And interestingly, and this will come up in this meeting as well, city is supposed to give 7 days notice to camps. That's their policy. However, during the Aston Park, recent Aston Park stuff and a lot of other instances recently of multiple demolitions of camps are going on, city did 20 demolitions in the past year. 20 camp evictions. They've repeatedly just outright ignored that. And when pressed, cops have said, cities have said, that got repealed. Oh, it's no longer on the books. We changed that. This is completely false, actually. They didn't announce a change formally until last night. So it's interesting that while the city is like, hey, well, you know, well, we just go if you'll break the law, which is minor trespassing charges, which is what our reporters and a lot of the people got too. They're also like disobeying their own laws, like very blatantly. So last night, the issue of houseless camps really dominated the agenda. There was a city manager's presentation, which really focused on this and was, and I have to say what follows is appalling to anyone who's ever dealt with houses or faced poverty. So I really want to reward listeners. There's some ugly stuff coming up here. Because I've covered council for over 16 years now, which is 17 years this summer, and I have almost never seen this open a display of bigotry from council members or the city staff. So they had a presentation. It was led by Emily Ball from the Economic Development Office, just kind of the city's point person on houselessness, and then from Captain Mike Lamb, the same person who was like openly lying to people that they could be, you know, to try to get them to leave the park for like having art supplies. And he's been the point person on previous evictions. And it was interesting kind of contrast because Ball was taking this kind of like supposedly progressive tone. We don't, you know, blame houseless people for this, you know, we just, it's this issue, we need to end it. And then Lamb's presentation was just openly like fairly false police propaganda, just basically blaming houseless people for violent crime and, you know, they were that they were the camps were a danger to the surrounding communities. And so it was an interesting like shift from just like, oh, we don't hate houseless people, to like, actually, no, like you're all a danger, you need to be kicked out. And that was basically the city manager's approach. She just outright said camps shouldn't exist, period.
Right.
Flat out. And this is someone who makes $280,000 a year and lives in one of the wealthier neighborhoods in Asheville. Like, it's easy for her to say she's not in danger of freezing to death. Council, with a few exceptions I'll get into, largely followed along with this and kind of let their own classism run rampant. Gwen Whistler, Councilor Gwen Whistler, who is a retired millionaire CEO, like, said that when she visited Wilmington, she didn't see any houseless people, and she wondered why Asheville just couldn't do the same thing. You know, she, interestingly, she said, oh, well, they're all coming here from elsewhere, and Blam was agreeing with her, but, like, Ball from the non-cop staffer was like, no, that's not true, that's a myth, these are only local people. So Councilmember Sandra Kilgore, just who's probably the most right-wing member of city council, just openly went on a tirade against houseless people, saying, oh, they all have substance abuse and mental illness issues, and, you know, that they're a danger to children by, like, that, you know, and it's just this repeated, Sage Turner, you know, was in tears practically just believing this cop propaganda, said that, you know, that there's a threat of houseless people in tents, and she was applauding the APD for this, like, recent spate of crackdowns. It really was some of the absolute ugliest, just, if you're poor, we don't care what happens to you. We're going to blame you and portray you as a danger. Mm. The APD claimed, and this I don't think really holds the scrutiny much, that like a lot of crime was happening, quote, in and around houseless camps.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of issues with their data. One is, you know, they said in and around is like 1,000 feet. Well, if you go from, say, 1,000 feet from the Lexington Avenue camp they demolished last February, you have a good swath of downtown,
right,
where there are a lot of people and a lot of business and a lot of tourism and plenty of crimes, no doubt, especially like property crimes, that don't have anything to do with the houseless camp nearby.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the fact that in some cases violence going on, like this is violence happening to houseless people. And the solution apparently is to repeatedly kick them out in the cold. It was just blatantly like, we don't want to see poverty. We don't want to see poor people. They're all dirty and dangerous. It was incredibly ugly and incredibly bigoted. The one member on council who spoke up against this to any real substantial degree was Kim Roney, who was more active than she's been in some previous sessions. And she said, look, like, we are creating a public health crisis. Like, where are people supposed to go? And she said, look, if someone has $700,000 and they buy a house here, they're a resident. If they have $700 to buy a hotel room, they're a guest. If they have $7 in a tent, they're not welcome here.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the rest of the council just kind of leaned on this, you know, supposed danger. You know, this has already been picked apart by a lot of people who kind of monitor this stuff. Patrick Connett, who's a government transparency person, who's, you know, monitored city council for a long time and dealt with open records, says that they claim that 25% of violent crime in the last 2 years was near houseless camps, but the total number they cite for those crimes is way lower than the APD's own tracker shows. Mm. And it's worth noting the APD's own figures show crime, including violent crime, drastically down in over the last year. And this is interesting because it's important because you've seen a lot of fear-mongering about a crime wave now. And the APD has also contradicted themselves in this. Like, in December, they were saying there's a large crime wave, we need more overtime, we need more recruitment. And then 2 weeks later, they were even telling the Citizen Times, no, actually, violent crime's gone down, which is what their numbers show. So this was really ugly. Council didn't really come to any resolution on it, you know, other than to keep doing it. They're eliminating the seven-day waiting period. You know, waiting period.
Mm.
This too, because, like, the city manager's presentation didn't go up until afternoon yesterday, and the deadline for signing up to comment for a city council meeting is 9 a.m. on Tuesday. And this is also a pattern of them like pushing through changes last minute and not consulting the public at all. When the public was consulted, they were pretty angry in the other direction. There were a few right-wingers that called in, but in general, of like about half the people who called in actually loudly condemned this. They said it was inhumane, it was cruel, like, you know, no data and information out there. Oh, actually interesting. One of the crimes they cited were overdoses. Overdoses are not a crime. You know, they're a public health issue, but they're not a crime. It is not a crime for someone to overdose, even with the messed definition of crime that, like, the APD uses. So they're really, it was just pure outright fear-mongering.
I'm curious. As you said, the public is, you know, also condemning what the police is doing. And I feel like, what do council members think these people are going to do? You know, like, where are they going to go? What's going to happen if you just keep breaking their camps up? Do they just expect them to go to California or something? I don't get it. And I'm wondering with if folks like Amy Cantrell or Beloved, you know, any of those folks, are they publicly commenting during this time as well?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Amy Cantrell, who's the director of Beloved House, which is a house of services group that's been kind of active on this front historically, spoke up and absolutely condemned this. Condemn these sweeps, saying that it's much harder to keep people alive when they keep getting evicted from their shelter and having their belongings destroyed. I also point out, like, when violence does happen, certainly violence happens in, you know, in every community. Heck, cops are disproportionately domestic abusers, for example. But if, you know, if say a rich neighborhood like the one most city council members live in, you know, let's say there's rape or abuse there, the response isn't to evict everyone on the block overnight. You know, if you propose that, as supposedly in the name of stopping rape and abuse, if, you know, someone in this community had raped or abused someone,
right,
that would clearly be seen as absurd, because housed people are seen as, especially well-off ones, they're seen as more human and more deserving of rights than unhoused people. Heck, in a lot of cases, you know, rape and abuse happens in wealthier neighborhoods, gets ignored entirely. The police won't press it. They won't prosecute it. So that's, you know, I think that's notable in this discussion, because I think some of those assumptions don't get questioned enough. So, yeah, a lot of members of the public were like, well, where are people going to go, basically? Where are they going? You know, like, this is nothing. As someone put it, social cleansing. The point is to get poor people out. And I don't think necessarily think past that. And I think a lot of this does come down to visceral hatred of houseless people. You definitely saw that from Kilgore. You saw that from Deborah Campbell to some degree. Now, these are people who are generally very well off. They've been very well off maybe their entire lives in a lot of cases. And they just don't like the sight of poor people. And a lot of the policy really doesn't go much further than that. And the fact that some of the rich people they're listening to also don't like seeing houseless people.
Right.
Whistler was very public about the goal being not seeing houseless people. And the hope is basically that they'll eventually get so miserably leave town. Or honestly, and they won't say this, but it's the point of it, the hope is that they'll die. They'll freeze or overdose or have some health thing that keeps them from being visible in public.
And
they won't
say
that. They don't admit themselves that that's the point of this.
Yeah, we don't know, you know, what their motivations are or where they're coming from. Yet we do know that, you know, they're very pro tourism, pro hotel.
Yeah.
We do know that they, you know, we are a destination city. And we do also know that, you know, when tourists see homeless folks, you know, that's not a good, quote unquote, look for the city.
Yeah. And that's driving a lot of this. As a matter of fact, the safety complaint, because it's worth saying, anytime the city claims the houseless danger, that is the line they use against every marginalized group to justify police crackdowns every single time. You know, we had a whole story in September on how they intentionally did that with a local black community, exaggerated violence going on there and underplayed violence going on, you know, done by white people, to try to, like, justify more funding and more crackdowns. It is their playbook doesn't change that much. Tourism, a lot of it. And to be clear, I'm not saying that council's waking up. The council members that are for these sweeps are waking up and going, I want to kill houseless people. But if that's the obvious result of the policy and year after year they keep choosing it, I don't think they really care. They want them out of sight. And if people, you know, have their lives collapse, basically, then that accomplishes that goal for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they were not talking about houseless people in terms that recognize their humanity last night in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, when violence does occur in houseless camps, it is houseless people suffering that violence, which then is used as an excuse to make their lives worse. So I do think that's worth mentioning. You had a number of locals call in. You know, they said that this was, you know, one person used the term genocide. You know, this is a term to just wipe out an entire population to get them out of sight. Others said that, you know, the blade was basically put a boy for recording human rights abuses that were going on or trying to. Conant spoke again and said that, this just does condemn the arrest and said, look, this just does not map out as something that, like, makes sense as any sort of policy whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's all pretty notable.
Yeah. Like you said, not a lot was sort of decided last night, so I'm not sure where we're going to be going from here next, David. Any ideas?
Well, and that's – so this is an interesting point, actually. I think what you saw – no, nothing was decided on policy last night. They didn't take any vote. Though what they didn't do, I think, was substantial, which is they basically signed off on this – on putting on paper this much more draconian attitude towards houseless people.
Right.
But it was also clear they were doing this in the face of a lot of public opposition, of like, I think 15 speakers last night, half were against the city's direction, sometime pretty middle thing. And to be clear, actually, cause I should note this, for a very rare occurrence, the Blade actually had a statement in public comment, which reporter Matilda Bliss read. Which I'd actually like to read now, if you're okay with
that.
Yeah,
please do, and that might be a good point for us to wrap as well. So, it should be noted that Matilda didn't even get through the entire statement during the meeting.
No, and that's actually interesting, and I'll note where she was cut off. So this is a full statement, and it's up on our social media as well. This is a statement from the Asheville Blade News Cooperative. On December 25th, Asheville police arrested two Blade journalists for reporting on the APD's Christmas night raid of the Aston Park camp. Both were standing back and covering the crackdown from a distance. They were targeted first, despite repeatedly identifying themselves as press. Officers shouted about them taking pictures, blocked them from recording their actions, then hauled them off in handcuffs. The cops gave one reporter's belongings, including her phone. After this, they escalated their brutality, dragging people out of tents for daring to demand a safe space to sleep. This is the second time Blade journalist Veronica Coit has been arrested by the APD for doing their job. In a 2020 listening session with a city consultant, police officers named no scrutiny from media and knowing your actions will not be scrutinized as among their major goals. These arrests have been strongly condemned by the Committee to Protect Journalists, the international organization that defends press freedom. They have called for charges to be dropped and all belongings returned. As journalists in Asheville who are not deferential to City Hall, we're all too familiar with the petty cruelty that defines your organization. Let us remind you that whether the city council or the city manager or anyone else in city government likes our coverage is irrelevant. In fact, if you don't, it's a good sign we're doing our jobs. The role of independent media is not to make those in power happy, and our rights do not depend upon us doing so. The attack on the press is part of a wider pattern of cowardice here, with the mayor and council so fragile they try to shut down any criticism from the public they don't like. You may ask why we are angry and why we're unafraid to show that in our coverage. Because you're the kind of people that will attack a houseless camp on Christmas and arrest reporters for covering it is as good an answer as any. We are sick of hearing city officials whine of the law as a cover for cruelty. To quote the old saying, the law in its majestic equality forbids both rich and poor alike from sleeping under bridges and begging for bread. City government is also happy to break the law whenever it wishes. Last summer, mayor and council blatantly violated open meetings law to shut down a budget hearing because they didn't like people criticizing the police department. We have witnessed APD captains falsely tell locals they could be charged with felony littering for having art supplies in a park. When the CDC declares the houseless camp shouldn't be evicted, council and the manager ignore them because you hate poor people. We have seen city staff refuse to follow rules requiring them to give campers 7 days notice, then lie the policy was scrapped. We have suffered cops ignoring the First Amendment to arrest journalists they don't like. The law is a joke. City council is a joke. You, Mayor Mannheimer, are definitely a joke. The public's outrage is not a joke. We will not be silent. Not now, not ever. We will fight these charges. We will fight every lie you come up with. No matter what, we will continue to report the truth.
Well, with that, again, I thank you for your reporting. Our best to Matilda and Veronica in solidarity as well. And thank you, as always, for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Wow. Thank you, David.
Hey, sorry to drop that statement in there, but I felt it was kind of important for transparency's sake.
Totally.
And yeah, let's.